This episode of Stock Doc is sponsored by Barclay Pearce Capital, a leading Australian corporate advisory and equities trading firm. Focused on your vision, Barclay Pearce specialises in making it a successful reality. The interviews and discussions in this podcast are opinions only and not financial or investment advice. Listeners should obtain independent advice based on their own circumstances before making any financial decision. Hi everyone, welcome to this edition of Stock Doc. I'm your host, Dr. Nigel Finch. Today on the program, I'm speaking with Linton Burns. He's Managing Director at Verbrec, who are listed under the ticker code VBC. Now, Verbrec is, a very diversified company, operates in asset management and also in training. On the training side, Verbrec delivers these training and assurance solutions to really develop high-performing workforces. The numbers are pretty staggering. It's run around 200,000 courses over the last decade and trained more than 150,000 Australians in the workplace. Linton, thanks very much for joining me on the program again.
Thanks, Nigel. Good afternoon.
Well, we spoke in October last year and got a really good update on your company, but a lot's happened recently. So maybe just to start off, just a bit of a quick refresher, can you give our listeners just a very quick snapshot of the size and scale of Verbrec? Just things like maybe the headcount, last year's full revenue, market cap, number of customers, something like that?
Yeah, certainly, Nigel. We've got about 550 team members in the business. Market cap's around 45 million. Revenue for FY20, from memory, was 117 million. For the half year just gone, 31 December, revenue was 48 million. Just to recap even further back from that, Verbrec came from the heritage Logicam, so we rebranded Logicam to Verbrec in November last year, which is a culmination of the whole reverse takeover and merger of OSD with Logicams, which closed in June 2019, so 21 months ago. Since then, we've taken a lot of costs out of the business. We've merged a lot of the business units, changed out some management, changed out the board. And I guess, as a result of that, we thought, well, it's a completely new company now, completely different what Logicams was a couple of years ago. So we thought to rebrand a Verbrec makes a lot of sense.
For those who don't know your company, can you tell us briefly about some of the target markets and also the products and services that you're providing?
Yeah, certainly. So the company we're actually an engineering and operations service provider. So you mentioned asset management and training before. So predominantly at this stage, we are an engineering design house, particularly around controls and automation, electrical and instrumentation, pipelines, and we also do have a multidisciplinary team. So we've got an engineering arm, but also an operations side of the business after the assets have been built, how they operated, maintained, and training the operators. Yeah, so the markets we play in are split roughly a third in terms of revenue between mining, oil and gas, and infrastructure. So as you'd expect with mining, and in all those markets, we generally engage with tier one companies, so blue chip companies, mining, BHP, Rio Tinto, Fortescue Metals, oil and gas, Santos, Oil Search, Origin, Arrow Energy, infrastructure, it's mainly water, so mainly water utility companies like WA Water and Urban Utilities in Queensland. So, and the geographical footprint, New Zealand, office in the oil and gas province in the Taranaki, head office in Brisbane, probably our largest office, smaller office in Melbourne, reasonable size office in Adelaide, and a growing office in WA servicing the mining industry in the main, and then finally a small office in Darwin. We also do some work in PNG, but execute that out of our Brisbane office in the main.
And across the top of that, you've got your training businesses as well, right?
Yeah, exactly. So We've got a training business. So the way we look at our training business is that once assets have been built, people need to operate those assets. So our training business until very recently has been really focused on the assets that we design and build. So that's electrical instrumentation, so and controls and automation. So switch gear, hazardous area, operating in hazardous area environments and high voltage environments. So it's generally, the way we look at it is we design and build an asset and then it's really training the operators to use the asset. So it is complementary in that regard. So yeah, that business is called Competency Training and it's a registered training organisation. So it's registered with ASQA, who's the government regulating body.
Well, I want to talk about your recent acquisitions, but before that, let's try and understand some of the macroeconomic factors that impact your sector. So let me fire off a couple of questions with you. First of all, across your different business lines, to what extent do you think government funding is holding aside JobKeeper, but is there government funding impact your business?
Yeah, predominantly in the infrastructure side of the business. As I said, we've got some large projects ongoing with the utility companies, which are government-owned organisations, WA Water and Urban Utilities. So, and I think, you mentioned JobKeeper, but the government's obviously really keen to keep the economy growing and pumping money into it to keep it growing through this COVID period. So we do see some significant infrastructure spend coming up. So in that regard, our infrastructure side of the business, we do see that, there's some good opportunities coming up into the future.
And what's happening in the mining and oil and gas sectors generally? I mean, what are you starting to see there with, is there an uplift in activity?
Definitely. Definitely mining. The iron ore price, for example, has really held up strong the last 12 months. Brazil had a lot of issues with COVID. So the major iron ore producer over there, Vale's had a lot of issues, operational issues because of lockdowns and social distancing and such like. So as a result of that, supply's been short out of Brazil. So, but WA hasn't been impacted. As we know, the WA borders were locked hard there for a long while. Mm-hmm. And the reason for that was predominantly to protect the economy over there because it's very strong. The iron ore price has held up very well in the last 12 months. So BHP, Rio, Fortescue Metals are going, producing as much as they can, much tonnage as they can. So we see there's a lot of activity at the moment ensuring that those operations can be maintained at that level. There's no single point of failure in a lot of their assets. So a lot of work in WA, and we've seen a lot of growth in the last 12 months off the back of that. Oil and gas, not so much, not the same. So you might remember the oil and gas price really declined significantly 12 months ago just because demand fell off a cliff. People weren't driving. They were isolating at home. International travel, air travel full stopped. So the demand side fell off a cliff. So pricing declined rapidly and significantly. And the oil and gas producers, they just manage their cash flows. So they try and stay cash flow positive through downturns like that. So the only way they really manage to do that is to really pull back on their CapEx. And when they pull back on their CapEx, obviously that means that they're not building infrastructure, which is what we do. We design the infrastructure. So we've seen a little decline in work from the oil and gas side of our business, but it's very cyclical. So because there's been less spend, as soon as the oil and gas price goes back up again, and it's back up at $70 a barrel now, roughly, we'll see the money being spent again, and they'll be in catch-up mode. That's the cyclical nature of the oil and gas industry. So we do actually see that some good opportunities starting to emerge.
And just back to JobKeeper, I'm mindful of this because, you know, it's March now and, you know, JobKeeper's coming to an end. What do you think the implications will be for your business for, you know, the cessation of JobKeeper? How do you think that's going to affect the trading business? How do you think it's going to affect your business as a big employer?
I don't think in a material way. I think JobKeeper's really designed to prop up, you know, maybe the travel and tourism sector, hospitality sectors. Mm. Our training business, even our training business, is with tier one clients training the operators of some of those mining and oil and gas assets. So I don't see a material impact in the next couple of weeks, Nigel, off the back of JobKeeper finishing up.
Well, let's talk about some of the acquisitions. So I guess site skills training. This looks like a really good deal to me, given it's going to contribute about $2 million in EBITDA, which is, from what I understand, roughly the cash cost to acquire it. Can you tell us a little bit about the site acquisition and, you know, how it came about and how you think it's going to work strategically?
Yeah. So I talk to the strategy first. So our strategy is to bolster some of our current business units and current service lines. So, you know, as I said earlier, we're about $110 million, $120 million revenue business. We're bound to have some subscale business units. And by subscale, I mean they don't have the breadth or the capability or the service offering to really service our clients as well as we'd like to. And they don't have the scale to cover some of the fixed overheads. So, you know, the economies of scale aren't there or the efficiencies aren't there. So that's our focus in terms of growing forward, is to bolster some of those existing business units through some M&A. And the site one is bolstering our competency training business unit. So it'll actually triple the size of our training business. So historically, we've been doing roughly $6 million per annum in revenue. We'll get an additional $12 million mm-hmm. off the back of the site transaction, so it'll take it to $18 million. And as you said earlier, an additional $2 million in EBITDA over and above the current $1 million that competency training derives. So it's a material transaction if you look at it just from our training business perspective. How it come about, and then I'll get a little bit, I'll go on to what site actually does versus what CT does. How it came about is that we identified that site, well, perhaps we need to do something, and it goes to why it's an asset sale and not a, we're not buying the shares in the business, we're actually buying the assets. They do have an ongoing legal matter with the regulator, with ASQA, and there was a possibility that they might lose their RTO designation, which is their registered training organisation designation. So that would fundamentally basically kill their business overnight. So we identified that as an opportunity. So we engaged with them and, they needed to do something. We're a logical acquirer of the business, and that's why we structured it as an asset sale. So, we think we got it at a pretty good price as well. As you say, it was about, one times the upfront cash costs. Yeah, there's a couple of earnouts in FY22 and FY23, but upfront we're paying $1.94 million and get $2 million in EBITDA on a full year basis. So what site does? It's very complementary to CT. It actually, they service the mining and oil and gas industry as well, which is where we focus. But it provides a bit more general training. So working from heights, working in confined spaces, mobile plant operating, training some of the gas operators. So it's a bit more generalist than our specialist CT training business. So, but there's a lot of synergies in merging and bringing together the back office functions. And that's where the savings will be made.
Well, look, it was, on paper it looks like a great acquisition. You've got a lot of experience in putting these things together because this is not the only acquisition you've done. You've only just completed another one in December. You you want to talk about
that? Yeah, well, obviously the old merger and acquisition of Logicans by RSD was one as well 20 months ago. So yeah, we have got a bit of capability. But the one we did over Christmas and New Year was EIM, so Energy Infrastructure Management, which is bolstering and some nice bolt-on into our asset services business, which is really operating and maintaining critical infrastructure, which is the high-pressure gas network around Australia, particularly the East Coast. It's a significant interconnected gas transmission grid now all the way up and down the East Coast, critical infrastructure. So EIM operates and maintains that infrastructure, and OSD Asset Services business been doing exactly the same thing for many years. So knew EIM very well, and I knew the people very well. As part of that transaction, we got some good people. EIM was owned by AGL and Arrow, 50-50, and as part of the transaction, Arrow agreed to extend the O&M operations and maintenance agreement on the Arrow pipeline. So we've got another three-year contract operating and maintaining those pipelines. Plus, they also operate a pipeline for Ergon Energy and Alinta Energy in Queensland and do some ad hoc work for Santos and others. We've got some really good systems out of EIM, and we're merging the OSD contracts onto the EIM systems to integrate it. We also got $3.2 million in franking credits, and basically that's what we paid for the business over and above the working capital. So we only paid $3.2 million if you net off the working capital.
Yeah, you've done very well with these acquisitions, Linton. I think you must be formidable in the negotiating stage of these. Look, your company's had some really great financial results, I think, even with the impact of COVID-19. Can you talk us through some of the headline numbers and also help us understand what's driving the performance? I mean, obviously there's clearly a lot of activity in mining and the like, but just give us some insights into, you know, is it operational cost efficiencies that you're delivering, or is it just headline revenue flooding through the gates?
Yeah, it's a bit of both. We've been working on a few things. Obviously, we're always cognizant we've got to continue to win work. So we've invested more in our BD capability. As I said earlier, there's a lot of opportunity coming out of WA. And we actually changed out the management team in WA, and that's borne a lot of really good fruit. So we've got a lot of new work coming out of WA off the back of a strong mining sector over there. So revenue's holding up pretty well in the mining, well, growing in the mining sector. Worked on some of our systems. So yeah, a new project delivery system and also a new ERP system. So if you look at our financial results for the half year ending December just gone versus the previous corresponding period 12 months ago, our gross profit increased 2.4% from 30.9% to 33.3%. So we're really working on our project delivery and improving our margins. As I said earlier, we stripped out a lot of costs with the merger of OSD and Logicams. And the other thing which I've mentioned, is that we went live with a new ERP system on the 4th of January, which will really bear some really good fruit. And I'll see a good efficiency dividend coming out of that in terms of just one way of doing stuff. We did have multiple payroll systems and multiple finance systems. Now we've only got one system. So in terms of merging and integrating companies as we acquire them going forward, they'll come onto our new ERP platform. No question about which platform we're going to run their business off of. Now we've only got one platform, it's called Workday. So we've been working on both the revenue number and the overhead cost structure, but also ways of running our projects better to improve our gross margin. So work on it all.
Well, I just want to put you on the spot here about your dividends. So what's your dividend policy at the moment?
Well, yeah, we just announced to the market just the other week that we basically reinstated our dividend policy, really to signal to the investors and the market that we are cognizant that we should be paying a dividend, and we will as soon as, you know, I guess we see a clear line of sight out of COVID, and things have really, I guess, turned, and we got a fair bit more confidence now than we had sort of 6 months ago in terms of where the business is headed through the COVID period. So as soon as we are able to, we will start to restore the dividends. One of the things we don't want to do is restore it and then put it into hiatus again. So we're cognizant that once we restore a dividend policy and start paying dividends, we should continue to do so. But in general terms, our dividend policy is between 30 and 60% of NPAT. I know that's a wide gap, but you know, it depends on what M&A opportunities might be on the horizon, what other new projects you might want to invest a bit of cash in. So that, you know, there's obviously things we might want to do in the business to continue to grow the business that might impact which end of that 30 to 60% the dividend will actually fall in.
Mm. Well, I think that's also interesting because it sort of signals the intention to continue doing M&A going forward, if I can read the tea leaves that way. But I also think, you know, what you've done with the Side Skills by paying cash for it and a bit of bank debt for it, that made a lot of sense as well. But it's very rare to see an announcement about the intention to restore dividends come out from an ASX-listed company in this environment. So it's certainly, you know, getting a bit of attention. So done with that.
I guess the other thing is we've got a fair few franking credits now. We had a couple of million even before the transaction with EIM, and we got an additional 3.2 million with the EIM transaction. You know, I guess we're also telling the market that there's a high chance it'll be a fully franked dividend given the significant franking credits we have.
Beyond the dividend, what metrics do you think investors should be paying closer attention to when they're reading your announcements to get an idea of how you're traveling?
Well, there's a few metrics. So, you know, work in hand is always a number we put out. But work in hand is actually at a point in time. So it's at a particular date. And work in hand goes up and down. It can swing. So if you win a $10 million project, for example, your work in hand is going to go up by $10 million. And that just might be the day after you cut off your work in hand calculation. So it does swing, but we know it's a common KPI, for example, that companies in our sector and with a similar business model than that we have put out work in hand. So focus on that. I guess focus on, obviously our revenue and how our margins are performing gives you a good signal about whether we're under any pricing pressure, I guess, and whether we've got any projects that might be poor performers. Probably also focus on our EBITDA numbers and our EBITDA absolute dollar number, but also the margin. A business like this is valued off of an EBITDA multiple. And our cash generation probably is another one, because these businesses, unless you're investing a bit in terms of some CapEx or some internal systems like a new ERP system we did, there should be a reasonably strong correlation between EBITDA and cash generation. It's a bit more muddied now with ASX, AASB 16, the new leasing standard, but there should be a reasonable correlation between EBITDA and cash flow from operations. So they're the key metrics.
Okay, that's great. Well, look, finally, can you tell us a little about what investors can expect to see in the coming months?
Completion of the site transaction, so it hasn't closed yet. It's on track to close either side of Easter. We did say when we announced it at the back end of February it'll be 4 to 6 weeks, so yeah, early April, and we're still on track to close it early April. So look forward to, you know, the closing that, which would be fantastic. That's well underway. Any other announcements? Yeah, obviously, look, always keen to continue to look for other attractive M&A opportunities in our space, as I mentioned before. But really want to focus on integrating and merging those two acquisitions, EIM and Site, and to make sure that we deliver on those uplifts in EBITDA that we expect to see. So I guess really in the next 3 to 4 months, we're going to focus on that, just bolting these in and integrating them well into the existing business. Yeah, that's probably it for the near term, I think, Nigel.
Yeah, that's more than enough. Well, look, I wish you all the very best with the work in hand. And, you know, it sounds like things are going really strong over there, and it's really pleasing to hear. So thank you.
Yeah, thanks for your time. Yeah, thanks, Nigel. It's exciting times for us. So yeah, thanks a lot.
Well, thanks to Linton Burns, Managing Director at Verbrek, for joining us for this edition of Stock Doc. And you can stay in touch with us through our StockEd website. And if you haven't already done so, remember to subscribe to our twice daily newsletter for ASX market coverage, company profiles, and industry insights. This episode of the Stock Doc podcast was sponsored by Barclay Pearce Capital, Australia's leading corporate advisory and equities trading firm. Barclay Pearce Capital provides specialised corporate advisory and equities trading services to privately owned businesses, small to medium-sized public and ASX-listed companies.